Class is back in session. It's time for Baptist Basics University from BaptistBasics.org.
Welcome back to Baptist Basics University. I'm Matthew Gage. I appreciate you listening today as we get into lesson number 7 in our Bible survey series. And we will be doing an overview of the Gospels and the Book of Acts. Now, in the New Testament, we've covered some of the basics, but I just want to kind of refresh everything. There's 27 books, and the first 5 of those are historical, and those are the 5 books that we will be covering today. And then we will, in the next lesson, we will be covering the Paul's epistles, and then we will have a third lesson and finish out by covering the general epistles, all the stuff not written by Paul, and then also the one prophetic book in the New Testament, the book of Revelation. But today, we will be focusing, just as I say, on the 5 historical books. I'm not saying these are the only ones that are historically accurate or correct. That's not what I mean. These books are historical in nature. Now, the Old Testament, we took quite a bit of time to cover the historical books. Pretty much, we had a historical books lesson, but even we could throw in the books of Moses into that. So a good portion of the Old Testament is history. Well, the New Testament, as far as if bulk, history makes up a big part of it. The epistles of Paul and the general epistles and such are very short in most cases, especially compared to the Gospels. So at least by bulk, if we just want to do a word count and see, how much of a percentage of the New Testament is history, actually a large portion of it is. In fact, Luke himself, I read a stat, wrote the book of Luke and the book of Acts, and his writings, just by like word count and bulk of writing, is about 25% of the New Testament. So a good portion of it is contained in its historical books. Now, there are 2 types of historical books in the New Testament. We have the 4 Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and then we have the Book of Acts. The 4 Gospels, as they're called, Gospel means good news. These books cover the earthly ministry of Christ. They generally will begin with his birth and then go through to his death and resurrection, covering his ministry, his teaching, the miracles, and everything in between. And even a little bit before that, they'll go and cover even, the John the Baptist and stuff. So some of them will go a little bit further, but generally the Gospels are just concerned with the ministry of Christ and that pertains to it, like, say, John the Baptist. The Book of Acts is about the history of the early church. It's a story of how the gospel spread from Jerusalem throughout, the Roman world. And the Gospels cover a period of roughly about 30 years, and the Book of Acts covers a period of roughly about 30 years. So generally speaking, we're only covering about 60 years worth of history here in these books. Maybe a little bit more, but it's definitely going to be less than 70 from the dates I'm using. Now, before we dive into the books themselves, and I don't really, since we don't have a lot of books, and since 4 of them basically cover the same territory, I'm not foreseeing this being a very long lesson, but I've eaten those words before. But before we begin, I want to just do a brief overview just to give you an idea of the nature of the timeline that the New Testament history takes, just to give you an idea. Now, this is just a very general outline. I haven't really fleshed it out and added everything that happens. We'll cover the writing of, all the epistles when we get to them. But this just covers the major, historical points that I think it's important to kind of keep in mind just to keep the structure of the New Testament intact. The first thing is the birth of Christ. Now, these dates, especially around Christ, are hotly, hotly debated. Even today, even the calendar that we use today, when they developed it hundreds of years ago, they tried to date it back to 1 AD being the birth of Christ. Well, they made some miscalculations, you know, later researchers have found, and the general consensus is that Christ was probably born about the year 4 BC, that it's actually a little bit further back. This is for a number of reasons. One of the main ones being that the birth of Christ and its connection to Herod the Great, who would have died about 4 BC. So we kind of have to push it back to make that fit. So generally speaking, you'll see a date around 4 BC. And in fact, that is the date I most commonly see in the books that in the books and study tools that I've looked at. Now, the next event would be the ministry of Christ begins, and we know that from the Gospels, it is specifically mentioned that he was about 30 years old. So this would take place somewhere about AD 27. So Christ would be about 30 years old, so you can do the math. That makes sense, you know, from 4 BC to 27 AD. And Christ's earthly ministry, there's different chronologies on this. I've seen different numbers. Generally speaking, kind of the classic accepted number is about 3.5 years long. And that kind of goes into the study people have done concerning like the different feasts and festivals of the Jews that are mentioned and trying to put together an outline and make it all work. And 3.5 years is generally accepted, that from when Christ was baptized, began to teach in about the year 27 AD, that he would have died in the spring of AD 30. Now, there are different dates for this. In fact, in the notes on this, I have a little disclaimer at the bottom of this chart that I'm looking at, in that I am not following the usher dates like I have been for the Old Testament for this. There's a few little things in his dates. He actually basically has Christ not beginning his ministry till he's about 33. He hasn't born in 4 BC, but he's not actually, doesn't die on the cross till about 33 AD. So I wasn't really comfortable throwing that out there, because the more generally accepted is that, and in fact specifically mentioned, that Christ was 30 years old when he began his ministry or thereabout. But, and we take that to be pretty literal, that he was, you know, pretty close to 30, or, you know, slightly over, not 3 or 4 years later. And that his death would have been, you know, 3.5 or so years later. So I didn't really like Usher's date. So actually the dates I'm using from here out are going to be, the resource I'm going to use is the same one I used for my Acts series that I did for the Baptist Basics University. And it's a website called BibleStudy.org. And I can't really say I wholly recommend this website and everything that's on there, but they do have some pretty decent outlines and some of timelines and stuff. So that's kind of what I'm using, just for consistency's sake. And as I say, there's just a few things with Usher's dates, and they only vary by 2 or 3 years in a lot of cases with this, but I'm just not really all that comfortable going with those. So the resource I'm going to be using, and to keep things consistent with my with the dates in my Acts series, we're going to follow the timeline that the website BibleStudy.org has. And so I just want to get that out front right away, that these dates are going to differ. I followed Usher up to this point, but when it comes to that, I just am not comfortable. And I've said a lot about the dates before. They're pretty much a guess. Now, there is some research that has been done and a book that I respect, but I think that modern scholarship has kind of proven there's some errors in it. But there's a book called The Coming Prince by a guy named Sir Robert Anderson, who takes the book of Daniel in the 70 weeks and calculates to the day when Christ was crucified. And that, he has it in AD 33, and as I respect his research, but I'm not sure we can completely count on that. It just, let's say some people have gone back and looked and found some mistakes, and the history is constantly shifting these dates around. Historians are constantly making revisions and new research, and it was constantly shifting these dates around. So I respect his research, and I think what he was trying to prove is true, but I'm not sure with the accuracy of the ancient dates that we can be that accurate. So anyway, that's extra. I just wanted to point that out, and I've ranted and raved way too much about calendars and stuff in this series. Okay, so let's see, where were we? The crucifixion of Christ, about AD 30. And another commonly accepted date is AD 33, but I'm going with a little bit earlier date. Okay, Paul would be converted on the Damascus Road about the year 33 AD, just a few years later. Okay, Paul's three missionary journeys. The first one would take place between 44 and 46 AD, the second missionary journey between 49 and 52 AD, and the third missionary journey between 53 and 58 AD. Paul would die. Traditionally, it's going to be somewhere in the 60s AD. We're going to throw out 68 AD. And what's happening during this time frame, if you'll go in and listen to my Acts series, I delve a little bit further into the history in this. In fact, there's a whole lesson at the very end, the very last lesson, just as, I think I called it the rest of the story, and just deal with what happened after the book of Acts closes. But what's happening here is in, I believe it's 66 AD, or AD 66, what you're supposed to say, that there's the Jewish revolt begins, and the Jews revolted against Roman rule, and there is a lot of bloody battles that take place, and it's a pretty big deal. Future Emperor Vespasian is sent down, and he helps to and leads the troops into quelling this rebellion by basically killing a bunch of people, enslaving other people, looting, and just raising cities. I mean, it's not a lot of mercy was particularly shown. And this led to another key event, at least for history. Now, this is outside the historical books, but it's prophesied, and it's very important in the nature of Bible prophecy, is that in 70, AD 70, that the Jerusalem fell, or the main portion of Jerusalem was finally conquered, and the Temple Mount fell, and the temple is destroyed by soldiers under Titus, who is Vespasian's son and will be emperor after Vespasian passes away. So this is a key event. This is what Christ talks of in the Olivet Discourse in Matthew 24. Yeah, so it's a very important event in as far as like prophecy is concerned, also in Jewish history, but that takes place. This is pretty well accepted. This date is, I'm not sure I've ever seen another date put through this, but AD 70. And then the New Testament period, we can say, really ends somewhere around the year 100, and that's approximately when John died. Now, John is considered to be the last apostle living because for various reasons, one of which is that he was probably the youngest of Christ's disciples and that he lived longest. And there is plenty of evidence that he lived up into the 90s AD, and most people attribute the bulk of his writing to those later times. In fact, the book of Revelation, I think, usually is given about a date of about 90 that when it was written, usually very late. So, but that's just a broad overview. I just want to give you an idea of what's going on in New Testament history. I've covered, similar things in the Old Testament. So I just want to give you, this is an idea of what's going on mostly in the first century AD. And the general things. Now, let's say we didn't go into a lot of specifics with Christ's ministry because most of it's going to fit into about a 3.5 year window. And basically from Christ's birth to the beginning of his ministry, there's not a lot that happens. It's very quiet there for a good portion of his life, 20 plus years, not quite 30 years. There is pretty much silence except for one event that's covered where Christ is left behind at the temple and, you know, Joseph and Mary leave and have to come back and find him. Other than that, we really know nothing from the infancy of Christ to suddenly, you know, him coming on the scene when he's about 30. So anyway, that is just New Testament history. So let's start looking at the five historical books, shall we? The first book is the book of Matthew. Now, the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, are all named after their authors. And Matthew was written by Matthew. He's also called Levi. He was the tax collector that is called by Christ. He was the tax collector. Basically, he's working as a client kind of for Rome. He's collecting probably duties on trade, on like a tariff on trade that's passing through. And what the deal is basically Rome tells the king, the local king, say, we want X amount of money. That king tells his tax collectors, hey, I want X amount of money, usually with a little bit of a markup so he can pocket some of it. And then those tax collectors then would mark it up a little bit and keep, you know, so Matthew was probably making pretty decent money, and his profession would be highly frowned upon by the Jews of the time, who despised the Roman rule in general. So, but anyway, that's who Matthew is. Matthew's gospel most likely is the first one to be written somewhere perhaps around 50 AD. The dates on the gospels are kind of difficult to track, and there's various dates attributed to them. But generally, it's somewhere in between 30 and 60 or 30 and 65 AD, somewhere in there. But Matthew is generally continued to be the first gospel written, and that his perhaps even Mark and Luke used his as a source in writing theirs. But most historians believe Matthew was the first one to be written. Okay, now as we study these gospels, let me get this out of the way. We're going to, let's say, the four gospels basically tell the same story, you know, the earthly ministry of Christ, but they're all unique. And what I want to focus on is just to give you a picture of what makes them unique. And we're just going to talk about this just a little bit. Matthew was primarily written for the Jews. I mean, this is for a number of reasons. It has more quotes from the Old Testament. It has more cases where, you know, Old Testament prophecies are fulfilled. And so Matthew's book is primarily written to a Jewish readership. Now, Matthew pictures Christ. All four of the books also will picture Christ in a slightly different light. And Matthew really shows Christ to be the promised king that was to come. Shows how the prophecy is fulfilled, and kind of, you know, showing him as the Messiah. So a very Jewish take on who Christ was, and Matthew contains the genealogy of Christ. Matthew and Luke are the only two books that do that. Now, Matthew's goes through Joseph, and it's Christ's legal claim to the throne, showing that, you know, he is a son of David, and therefore entitled to be on the throne. So Matthew really pictures Christ as a king. It contains more sermons by Christ, you know, him teaching and preaching, and with quite a bit of authority also. Now, a general outline, in fact, all of the three what are called synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, which are very, very similar. John's a little different. We'll deal with that when we get there. But Matthew, Mark, and Luke have a very similar outline in almost all the cases. It's going to start off, first of all, with the preparation. And this is going to cover Christ's birth, his childhood, and then even into kind of the early part of his ministry, the baptism and such. And this in Matthew is from chapter 1, verse 1 through chapter 4, verse 11. Next, there is a period of Christ's ministry primarily in Galilee, in the region of Galilee, and that's north up around the Sea of Galilee. It's north of Jerusalem, north of Judea. And this ministry in Matthew takes place between chapters 4, verse 12, and chapter 18, verse 35. And then there's a period where the ministry is more focused kind of around Judea and Jerusalem. And this is really beginning to focus in and get ready for the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ, what I'm going to call the Passion of Christ in these outlines. And this ministry around Judea and Jerusalem takes place between chapters 19 and 25. And then finally, covering the events of the Passion Week, the Last Supper, the arrest, the trial, the crucifixion of Christ, the burial, the resurrection, and even into the ascension, that is going to be chapters 26 through 28. Now, Matthew, let me just point out a couple of key passages. The first of all is the Sermon on the Mount. That's in chapters 5 through 7. That's a good one to know. The Beatitudes are there in chapter 5. So that's a good one to know, just to kind of help you not get an idea of Matthew. The second thing I want to point out is what's called the Olivet Discourse. And this is a very prophetic teaching by Christ. And it talks a lot about the end days. This is where he talks about the temple's going to be destroyed. And that's in Matthew 24 and 25. So that's another kind of key one to know. Okay, the book of Mark. Now, Mark was written by John Mark. This is the John Mark you'll read about in the book of Acts. And though Paul had some issues with him, he turned back during the missionary journeys. He stayed true, seems to have fallen in with Peter, and perhaps under Peter and with Peter as a source, he wrote his gospel. And it was written, I'm just guessing on this, somewhere around 55 AD, just to put it a little bit later than Matthew, but just to give you a general time reference. Now, Mark is, of the Gospels, is an action-oriented book. His audience is primarily, most people will attribute to the Romans. And there's not a lot of teaching, there's not a lot of parables, there's not, pointing out fulfilled prophecies and scriptures. It's just telling what Christ did. It's talking about some miracles. In fact, I believe there's more miracles in the book of Mark than any other. And so it's a very action-oriented book. It's what is Christ doing? Where is he going? Who is he healing? It's very much action-oriented. And this pictures Christ as a servant, that he's in action. He is helping people. And the nature of the book is very practical because, it's such an action-oriented book. Okay, in the general outline of the book, you'll have the early kind of preparation, Christ's baptism, and then the temptation of Christ. That's chapters 1, verses 1 through 13. Then we have Christ's ministry in Galilee. That's chapters 1, verse 14 through the end of chapter 9, verse 50. And then we have the ministry in Judea and Jerusalem, chapters 10 through 13. And finally, we have the Passion of Christ in chapters 14 through 16. So next, we have the book of Luke. Now, Luke was written by Luke, who is the physician who accompanied Paul. We can read about him in the book of Acts. In fact, he wrote the book of Acts, and he's mentioned in a couple other places in Paul's writings. We're going to say his book was written about 60 AD. We know it was written before the book of Acts, so we'll just bump it up a few years and say about 60 AD. Now, it is particularly addressed to a guy named Theophilus, who we have no idea who that is, but we could also, if you want to kind of go allegorical, I guess, interpreting that, the name Theophilus means, lover of God, so perhaps it's, a general thing he's throwing out there, but most people believe he really is writing this to someone, perhaps back at Antioch or somewhere. And Luke's book is historical. He states that he has researched this and tried to put it together correctly and in order. Let me flip over there real quick. It's in Luke chapter 1. It says, For as much as many have taken in hand to set forth in order a declaration of those things which are most surely believed among us, even as they delivered them unto us, which from the beginning were eyewitnesses and ministers of the word, it seemed good to me, having had perfect understanding of all things from the very first, to write unto thee in order, most excellent Theophilus, that thou mightest know the certainty of those things wherein thou hast been instructed. So, Luke, of the four Gospels, is probably, I'm going to say, the most historically accurate. In some cases, there are differences in the time frame that's given. Now, no other Gospel really just out and says, you know, look, we're trying to be very careful and get every detail right. They're more concerned with getting the message across. So there are differences when you go to comparing things between them, even in the order of events, even. So, but Luke says up front, you know, he's very careful to try to get the details right. And that's why when most people go to studying the life of Christ, they really lean very heavily on the book of Luke, because he appears to have done the most research and tried to get the details as correct and in order as possible. Now, his audience is usually attributed to be the Greeks, because he's dealing more with knowledge and facts. It's more for a more academic audience. And he pictures Christ as the Son of Man. It's kind of more of a focus on the humanity of Christ, not denying the divinity, but it's very historical in nature. He's really just trying to preserve what happened, who Christ was, but what he said, what he did, what he taught. So that's what when I think of the book of Luke, I think of history. That Luke is a historian. In fact, my opinion is, I think, probably one of the greatest historians of ancient times, just because of how beautiful and how accurate and even how concise his works are. He doesn't have to take multiple volumes to cover this history. He covers it very, very succinctly. I think that's the word I'm wanting. And, you know, very, very briefly keeps it going, but covers the facts. And as I say, it's just beautifully written history. If you compare it to other ancient writers, there is no comparison. This is far and away just more beautiful prose and style and flow than any of the other Roman historians. If you compare it to, say, even the writings of Josephus, who would come along a little bit later, the Jewish historian, I mean, there's no comparison. The book of Luke is just far more beautifully written than Josephus or say any other ancient historian I've tried to read. And the nature of the book is more, as I said, is more historical. Luke is really careful to make sure he gets the facts right. So the book of Luke also will give a genealogy of Christ. And that genealogy is through Mary. So it's more of the blood genealogy, the bloodline of Christ. So Matthew covered it through Joseph, because that's the legal. It's going to be through kind of through the father, even though, God was the father of Christ, but through Joseph, he has a legal claim to the throne. Through Luke, he has the blood claim through the throne through Mary. So that's something, that's one of the more interesting things. And that kind of goes in theme with, how he pictures Christ as a man, in that, in Matthew, he's a king. He needs that lineage. Mark, he's a servant. He doesn't, servants, it doesn't matter. It really, Mark just opens up and Christ is out there. He's going, there's not a lot of buildup. There's not a lot of that prehistory that's written. But the book of Luke, with him being a man is very important, who you are, where you've come from. So all that is in there, and there's much more given in here. In fact, it covers the nativity story in much greater detail, can't talk, than the other books. So when it comes Christmas time, you're reading out of Luke chapter 2. So we'll just go ahead. Let's look at the outline of the book of Luke. And first off, we have the prologue, which I've already read to you, verses 1 through 4 of chapter 1. And then we have the coverage of Christ's birth and childhood, which also with John the Baptist and you know, some of the preceding events. That's chapters 1, verses 5 through the end of chapter 2, which is verse 52. And then we have Christ's preparation, which, let me flip over here to it. It has to do with John the Baptist and Christ's baptism and stuff. That's chapter 3, verse 1 through chapter 4, verse 13. Then we have the ministry in Galilee, chapter 4, verse 14 through the chapter 9, verse 50. And then we have the journey to Jerusalem and getting into the, you know, the Judean ministry. That's chapter 9, verse 51 through chapter 19, verse 27. So, you know, the biggest bulk of the book. And then we have the events in Jerusalem, you know, kind of leading up to the Passion Week. And that's chapter 19, verse 28 through chapter the end of chapter 21, verse 38. And then we have the Passion Week of Christ, you know, death, burial, resurrection of Christ. That's chapters 22 through 24. And the key passage I want to point out, there's a lot of teaching in the book of Luke. I say it's a wonderful book. It's not just all about action. It's also, you know, trying to record, you know, his teaching. And point out chapter 15. It's got some of the more classic parables, the parable of the lost sheep, the lost coin, and also of the prodigal son, beginning in verse 11. You can also say chapter 16 if you want the rich man Lazarus. That's chapter 16, verse 19. But anyway, that's just a couple things you might want to keep in mind that are in the book of Luke. Okay, that gets us to the book of John. Now, the book of John is different than the other gospels. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they're sometimes called synoptic gospels. And synoptic is kind of like meaning same, kind of like you think of the word synonym, you know, it's words that have the same meaning. And synoptic basically just means that they're covering the same general ground, they're covering the same history. Well, John comes at or approaches writing about the ministry of Christ very differently. It's sometimes described as being supplemental or complementary. Now, I've done a series on the book of John, also in the, you know, our BBU series. And the way I described it is that it's kind of the inside look at who Christ was. Of course, Matthew knew Christ, and Mark may have, Luke may have, most people or some people I've read, you know, don't really think so that he would have actually known or seen or met Christ. Mark probably would have as a very young man. But John gives this very intimate look at Christ. And it's a very special book in how he deals with Christ. And the bulk of the book actually deals with the last just few days and weeks of Christ's ministry. You know, the Passion Week has only been just two or three chapters in these other Gospels. Well, the Last Supper begins in chapter 13. I mean, there's eight more chapters after that. So, I mean, half of the book is dealt with just the final, you know, days of Christ's ministry. Now, John's ministry, all right, let me back up. John wrote this book very late. Most people put it very late. I'm going to say 90 AD, there about this. That put it pretty late. It may not be quite that late. But it definitely was written afterwards. I think he did write it kind of to be supplemental or complementary to the other things that were getting around. These other gospels were getting around, and John, kind of being the last of the disciples, wanted to give this very insider, intimate look at the ministry of Christ. The audience for the book of John is the church. It's the believers. You know, let's go on. he pictures Christ as the Son of God, or as in chapter one, he describes as the Word. He really leans very heavily on showing Christ's deity. And the theme of the book is, and the nature of the theme is that it is very spiritual in nature. There's so many just wonderful portions with the last, when you get into the Last Supper, there's Christ praying for his disciples. Talks about him as Father One, the vine and the branches. Talks about chapter 15, verse 15. He said, henceforth I call you not servants, but I've called you friends. There's this really intimate look at the relationship between Christ and his disciples that takes place there. And just wonderful things. The promises of the Spirit in chapter 14. And, I mean, we could go on. Chapter 17 is his prayer for the disciples. And so very intimate look at what's happening in those final hours and those the teachings that Christ wanted to give his disciples there at the very last minute. So, all right, so let's move on. Let's hit the outline real quick. I'm sorry, I had to back away my phone. I got a text message. Hope you didn't hear that too loud. Chapters 1, verse 1 through verse 8 is the prologue to the book. And boy, you talk about when I did the series on the book of John, boy, it goes deep right off the beginning. In the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God, the same was in the beginning with God. I mean, it's amazing the doctrine and stuff that takes place there in that first chapter. But the prologue is the first 8 verses. And there's some other little portions some people will throw into that first chapter, first little portion that kind of will jump around a little bit. Christ's ministry, the entirety of the 3.5-year ministry, is, including John the Baptist's ministry also, is kind of mentioned in chapter 1. It goes from chapter 1, verse 9 through the end of chapter 12, which is verse 50. And I say, then chapter 13, that we get into just the final days of Christ's ministry and the Last Supper and the teachings that Christ is giving his disciples there, and then on kind of into the Garden of Gethsemane also, chapters 13 through 17. And then the Passion of Christ, the death, burial, and resurrection, chapters 18 through 20. And then chapter 21 kind of is an epilogue. And has the wonderful story about Jesus meeting the disciples and that have gone fishing, and the conversation he has with Peter, and saying, "Lovest thou me?" and all that's there. But that's the book of John. And in fact, I'm gonna tell you one of my favorite portions of the book of John is chapter 20, verses 30 and 31. And many other signs truly did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that ye might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing ye might have life through his name. He also said in another verse, talks about, if all the everything Christ did, it's right here, verse 25 of chapter 21. And there are also many other things which Jesus did, the which, if they should be written every one, I suppose that even the world itself could not contain the books that should be written. Amen. And so just wonderful, this inside, this very heartfelt look. He's not just recording history like Luke is really just recording the history and trying to get the facts straight. John's giving this very heartfelt inside look at the life of Christ and the ministry of Christ. So that is the four Gospels, and I hope I've done them justice. It really, boy, you just want to, because it's the life of our life and ministry of our Lord. It's so hard not to just go into such deep detail and really go in and talk about his ministry, his teachings, the miracles. We could spend hours upon hours just going through what happens with his arrest, the trial, the cross, the resurrection. Then we could go hours upon hours upon hours again, just on the doctrine we get out of that. But unfortunately, we can't do that right now. But boy, I hate to leave. I feel like I have not done those books justice. But the thing is, they're so simple to cover because the Gospels basically are the story of Christ. And they're probably the main books I think we ought to study in the Bible. We ought to know as much as we can about our Lord, about what he did, about what he taught. And it's not to say, the whole Bible is written by God. Well, that's very true. But these books deal specifically with Christ and with his teaching. And there's such wonderful, wonderful things. We just scratched the surface of parables and miracles and things. So let's just move on. The last of the historical books, the fifth and last one. And really, it's so weird. It seemed like I ought to do just a lesson on the Gospels. But we're going to throw in the fifth historical book here, and that's the book of Acts. And Acts was written by Luke also, and it's also addressed to Theophilus, which is in chapter 1. It's a verse 1, the former treatise, "Have I made, O Theophilus, of all that Jesus began both to do and teach." And so it's also written by Luke to the same person, and written somewhere around 63 AD. And we can be pretty sure this book was written early 60s AD. Covers a period of about 30 years. I think I mentioned that in our introduction. And the purpose of this book is to chronicle the spread of the gospel. And its subject is the early history of the church. And I like the outline that we have here. You can... basically, the key verse, if there's a key verse to the book of Acts, is chapter 1, verse 8, and it really gives an outline for the book. It says, "But ye shall receive power after that the Holy Ghost has come upon you, and ye shall be witnesses unto me both in Jerusalem and in all Judea and in Samaria and unto the uttermost part of the earth." And we can give an outline based on this. It talks about receiving power and being witnesses. Well, the receiving power, we'll call it just the preparation for the witnesses, chapter 1. And chapter 1 just kind of deals, has the ascension of Christ, has them choosing Matthias to replace Judas. And then we have them being witnesses in Jerusalem. That's chapters 2 through 7. And we have Pentecost in chapter 2 and Peter's sermon. And then different dealings that go on. Death of Ananias and Sapphira, chapter 5. First deacons are in chapter 6. Stephen's ministry, chapter 7. And then chapters 8 through 12, we see the gospel beginning to spread out. And the persecution that came was helping to kind of spread the fire a little bit. But chapters 8 through 12 are, being witnesses in Judea and Samaria. Chapter 8 is... the conversion of Saul chapter 9. Chapter 9 is the conversion of Saul of Tarsus, who will become known as Paul. Chapter 10 is very important. It is the first Gentile conversion of Cornelius. So that's very important. And let's see here. Then chapters 13 through 28. And really, the first chapters 1 through 12, Peter is kind of the main character. Chapters 13 through 28 is a story about how, being a witnesses to the world, to the uttermost part of the world, the Roman world. And Paul becomes the central figure in the book of Acts at this point. And this is where we get into the missionary journeys of Paul. And though Peter, doesn't really go away, the focus is on Paul and what he's doing, where he's going, the churches he's starting, Corinth, Ephesus, Thessalonica. And so the focus really, really changes to Paul there in the last, and finally ends with the gospel, with Paul actually being in Rome. And so if you'll go back, I actually have the whole series on the book of Acts, and we deal with it verse by verse. If you want to know more about it, you can go back and listen to that. But a couple of key passages to remember in the book of Acts. Chapter 2 is Pentecost, and chapter 9 is Paul's conversion. And that will do it. That covers our historical books of the New Testament. And I hope that's given you at least a good idea of what's going on, a good outline of the events, of the history, and even an idea of, like even with the Gospels, the uniqueness of each one. And if you read the Gospels with that in mind, you know, the way things are phrased or the facts that are used will just shine to you if you really look at it kind of through that lens of who they're written for, the purpose that they were written, of how the writer is picturing Christ. So I hope that that's a help to you. Well, that's it for today. I appreciate you listening. Check out BaptistBasics.org for other resources. And I hope that you join us next time in Lesson 8 as we jump into Paul's epistles. So, one last time, I'm Matthew Gage. Thanks for listening today.